Dev with Crime Hive, and this is another true crime story of how they were caught. Now, this story really begins when sanitation workers were collecting trash on the New Jersey Turnpike, and they would discover a large plastic bag. It seemed heavier than normal, and they were curious, so they opened up the bag and they found a human skull.
Crime Hive.
Crime Hive.
True crime buzz.
More bags and more body parts would emerge when police were called out. Police determined that there were two legs, two arms, an upper torso, a lower torso, and the head. Ligature marks were on the wrists, suggesting the person had been bound. In one bag, they found some items such as latex gloves, a bed sheet, a shower curtain, and a bloody saw. Bags were cleaned, the body parts were cleaned, minus this bloody saw, but it didn't have any suspect DNA or trace evidence from it. They were able to identify the victim, though, because in one of the bags was the victim's wallet with an ID, and that ID would identify the victim as 56-year-old Thomas Mulcahy, and he was an executive who had been in New York at the time, staying at a hotel. Police would track his whereabouts. They knew that he had a transaction of $200 at a local ATM, but the camera was down, and so they didn't really have much evidence from that. There was no evidence that he went back to his hotel, and they learned that he had stopped by a nearby gay bar, an upscale gay bar. He'd become intoxicated. A bartender had recognized the victim and believed he had met with some other white male with brown hair, but did not know if they left together and didn't have a lot of information. But a sketch was provided to the media, and it just proved to be unsuccessful. So police didn't have a lot of information to go off. Keep in mind, this killer is trying to get rid of evidence and cleaning off evidence to make it harder. And they did have one small clue, which was from the latex gloves. There was a bag left behind that had a CVS sticker, and that was traced back to a CVS store in Staten Island. So now they're putting little pieces together. This person most likely works or lives in Staten Island. But another year would go by, and in Manchester, New Jersey, another bag was discovered. Same MO. These bags were double bagged and knotted, and the body parts were dismembered the same way. So police believe this person had anatomical knowledge or medical knowledge based on the cuts. And they also learned that these bags and parts were also thoroughly cleaned before they were dumped. Again, ligature marks were on the wrists and the ankles. And this time they found a shopping bag that would be linked to only 9 stores in New York that would lead back to Staten Island. So with this shopping bag and the latex gloves bag, they creating this connection to Staten Island. But that's really all they had. So they went back to the original evidence and looked at the bags to see if they could try a super glue filming technique to lift some possible prints. And they were somewhat successful. They lifted 2 partial prints and a palm print. They would enter that into the criminal database, but there would be no match. This victim, in the second case, was identified as Anthony Marrero. Now, he was gay as well and apparently worked in the adult industry. And police are now seeing another clue. The first victim had been in an upscale gay bar. The second victim was gay. And then the third victim would also be linked to that notion of going into another gay bar, an upscale gay bar. But what would happen is 2 months later, police would find another dismembered body found in garbage outside of New York. And now police believe that they have a serial killer on their hands. Same exact MO. Police were not able to find any physical evidence such as DNA or prints. And they did get a lead from a bartender, because the third victim, identified as Mike Sakara, apparently had gone into a gay bar and had sat next to another white male. And the bartender had never seen him before, but he recalled that man saying that he was a nurse at St. Vincent's Hospital. And no one saw the two leave together, but the bartender remembered the person had a very common first name. The bartender thought it was Mark or John or something like that. So they created another sketch. And at this point, because it's really becoming a serial killer case, the media would dub this killer the Last Call Killer. Police would track down a possible lead to a nurse named Mark Clayton, who resembled the sketch, but the prints they found on the plastic bags did not match. So they have enough of a print to try to match it to someone, but it did not match this individual. They're putting out leads to all the hospitals, all the local hospitals, to see if anybody can identify this possible suspect, this sketch. And no leads would come about, and it would become a cold case. But during that time, the murders would also stop. 8 years would go by, and new technology would advance. And so police wanted to try this new fingerprint technique that was called vacuum metal deposition machine, or VMD. And it collects prints on non-porous surfaces. And there was a lab in Toronto, Canada, that was utilizing this technique with some really good results. Police would send these bags to Canada, and the lab would essentially expose the bags to gold, which was then heated into a gas, and then that gold vapor would be created as a film over the surface, and it was still invisible to the naked eye, but if they vaporized zinc to this process, it would adhere to the gold, which would lock the prints in place on the bag. So pretty sophisticated process, but it would create a much clearer print that they could then photograph. And then they can also compare to other people. Now again, this was in 1991, so not everything was electronic at this time. And because of that, police would need to send these prints out to every state and have their technicians look through these prints to see if maybe a possible suspect had just not been entered digitally into their system. So it was a excruciatingly painful task to these lab techs, and it would take some time, but they were able to get 16 partial prints from this process, 3 from the Marrero case and 16 from Mulcahy, and they were entered into all their police databases, but no matches. And so they would again send these hard copies to each state. Someone in Maine, one of the lab techs there in Maine, would look at these prints and actually find a match to an individual named Richard Rogers. Richard Rogers apparently had actually killed before. In 1973, he had been charged with killing a roommate. He left the victim's body in a tent on the road and said that he attacked his roommate in self-defense and was somehow acquitted for that crime. And because he was acquitted, he was able to obtain a nursing degree and he moved to New York. Now, police absolutely wanted to question this individual because his prints matched the bags collected on scene where these body parts and another evidence was kept inside. So they interview Rogers at his home, and he actually admits to knowing Mike Sicara, the third victim who was dismembered. But when police would get a little further into questioning, he would then lock up and would not explain why he did what he did or any type of motive. And so he would request an attorney, but police would search his home and they found more circumstantial evidence that linked him to these murders. One item they found was a bottle of Versed, which is a medication that is commonly used as a date rape drug. Furthermore, carpet fibers at Rogers' residence was also consistent with those on Mulcahy's body, and the plastic bags in his home were similar to the ones in which the body parts were wrapped in and dumped. They then found some highlighted passages from the Bible that mentioned decapitation and dismemberment, and they found a New Jersey road map and Polaroids with shirtless men with stab wounds. And so really bizarre evidence, but it's certainly not looking good for Rogers. Police would ultimately arrest Rogers for these murders because his prints matched. Rogers was also off duty during all of these crimes, and a bartender would pick out his photo as being in there with one of the victims. And he lived in Staten Island, just blocks from the stores where the latex gloves and the bags were purchased. Police believed he had used a sedative on these victims after getting them drunk and taking them back to his place, which he targeted gay men who were drinking heavily, and he would use this date rape drug on them, stab them, dismember them, and would clean their parts and the bags and evidence, thinking he was leaving no evidence, and he would discard these bags. But because of this new fingerprint technique, they were able to lift his prints. That would be the major clue that ultimately led to his capture. And again, police believed it was a sexual motivation, but he just wouldn't talk about it. And in November of 2000, he was convicted of two of the murders that had the most evidence, and he was given a life sentence. And that was how he was caught. I'll be back again, you all, for another episode next week. Don't forget to follow me on this podcast and subscribe if you're on TikTok or Instagram, YouTube. I would appreciate a follow and a like. Show some interaction, as I will be building out my YouTube channel. And we'll catch y'all next week.
Crime Hive.
Crime Hive.
True Crime Buzz.